Kof Aleph Kislev, Thursday the 19th of December, Rabbi Adam Edwards. Why do the events in Yosef's life keep repeating?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to be back in this esteemed venue, and it looks like you came with halachas. Good introduction for those halachas this morning. So lots to talk about this morning. Now, it could be that everything I'm about to say this morning, you've all heard. Could very well be, especially, I'm sure you've pretty much, you gentlemen, have heard everything there is to say on the parsha. That could very well be. But I heard the following wonderful shiur from Rabbi David Foreman. It's based on his shiur. Maybe you've heard everything I'm about to say, but the way I'm about to present it, I hope, perhaps, is maybe a, hopefully, a little bit of a novel idea. So let's go with that, and if nothing else, it'll be a bit of chedorah. So we're going to talk about Yosef, of course. That's the theme of today. And everybody asks, I mean, it's no chiddush to ask in this week's parsha, what is the topic? Why do we introduce the story of Yosef? Why do we interject the story of Yosef with the parsha of Yehuda and Tamar? Right? Everybody asks that. What does one have to do with the other? For our purposes, what we're going to talk about is the following. The key to the puzzle, I think, is the following. What we have is Yehuda and Tamar. We find that we're dealing with goats and coats. That's what we're going to deal with. Because at the very end of the story, Tamar, who has Yehuda's coat, challenges him to recognize whether the coat is his, as we all know. And we see in source 2, she says to him, Haker na, do you recognize this coat? And as we all know, we've heard this phrase before. Because Yehuda has once before, has also dealt with goats and coats. When in the sale of Yosef. In that story, Yehuda and his brothers, as we know, strips Yosef of his coat, they slaughter the goat, put the blood on the coat, and send it to their father. And as they did that, what do they ask their father in source 1? They also say, Haker, no, father, do you recognize this coat? We're all familiar with this. And it's the beginning of a remarkable series of connections between these two stories of Yosef's sale and the episode of Tamar and Yehuda. Now, we don't have time to go into all of the connections between these two stories, but suffice to say there are many connections between the story of Yosef and the sale and Tamar and Yehuda. But let's go far further. There are more connections between the subsequent episodes and as we are about to see. So let's look at the next episode. After the episode, do we see continuing repetitions as we go further in the stories? The next episode involves Yosef's interactions in the house of Potiphar. So as we know, he is sold to Potiphar. Yosef earns the complete trust of his master there, and he gets put in charge of the whole house. Then Yosef is faced with a tremendous test, which Yosef resists with a Potiphar's wife. And when she won't take no for an answer, she grabs hold of his coat. In a split second, he has a choice to make. And what does he do? He resists the test. He makes a choice and he slips out of the coat and he runs outside. Mrs. Potiphar, enraged, turns the situation around using the coat in her hand as evidence. False evidence, lodges an accusation against him, of rape against him, and Yosef is condemned to the royal dungeons where he languishes for many years. Of course, that reminds us of another episode of Yosef. Of course it does. When else does Yosef occupy a very significant position of responsibility in a household, second in charge to a man of the house? When else does Yosef face a crisis brought about by other members of the household? When else does he lose a coat? When else do the adversaries of his household used the coat as false evidence. Lie about him to the master of the house. When else is Yosef condemned to go into a hole in the ground? Well, you'll know that's clear. That was the story of Yosef being sold and condemned to go to the pit in the ground. So it does seem like there's a pattern going on here. So first we find that Yehuda and Tamar has a connection to the sale of Yosef. Now we see that the sale of Yosef is connected to the next episode where Yosef is sold to the house of Potiphar, Mrs. Potiphar. So if it is a pattern, as we say, once is an accident, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern. So does this happen a third time? Well, yes it does. So what's the next episode after that in Yosef's timeline? The next story that happens is Yosef gets thrown into the dungeon by Potiphar. And the next major story in Yosef's saga is how Yosef gets out of the dungeon. And this is what happens. Paro is experiencing the dreams. And he's searching for an interpretation of the dreams that suits him, that makes him feel good about himself. And he hears about this young boy, this young guy in prison, and who seems to have a knack of interpreting and understanding dreams. So Paro wastes no time in calling for Yosef. And he's seen in source 3, Vayishlach Paro, Vayikra es Yosef, Vayiritzu min habor. Paro sends for Yosef and pulls him out of the pit. That's interesting. Where was Yosef? Prison. Beis HaSoar, as we see in source 4. Where did they take Yosef to? The Beis HaSoar. Where did they take him out of? The bar. It's almost as if the Torah is somehow intentionally blurring the narrative here to remind us that something is not quite right. 13 years ago, the brothers threw him into the pit. He's not in the pit, he's in the Beit HaSoar, clearly. But he take him out of the pit. Now, the story continues. What happens when they take him out of the bar? In source 3, Vayigalach v'yichalef v'sim lo yisav. He gets a haircut, changes clothes, he gets to wear these nice, beautiful new clothes. What does that remind us of what happened back in the sale of Yosef? Of course, the brothers threw him in the pit. What do? They strip him of his coat, as we see in source 5. Vayivshitu es Yosef es kutanto. They took away his nice clothes, his coat. So events are taking place now that seem to remind us of the events that took place 13 years ago, except it's happening in almost a reverse order. Back of the pit, Yosef first lost his clothes, and then he was thrown into the pit. Back now, first he gets taken out of the pit, then he gets these new clothes. So it's all happening in reverse. And then this change in fortune continues, because look what happens next between Yosef and Paro, back in source 3. V'yavo el Paro. Yosef comes before Paro. Here's Paro, the ultimate authority figure. And he's telling Yosef to come to him. And Yosef comes. Think about the reverse of that event. Yosef comes to Paro. What happened in reverse? An authority figure sends Yosef away. And that's what happened. In source 6, V'esh l'cha aleihem. His father sends Yosef away in the story. He sends him away 13 years ago. Right before Yosef was thrown into the pit, right before he loses his clothes, his father sends him away. Next, what happens? Paro calls Yosef and says, I had this dream. So 7, chalom chalamti. I had a dream. I need you to interpret it. Of course, 13 years ago, the same thing happens. In reverse though, right before his father sends Yosef away, Yosef tells Yaakov about his dream, I had a dream. In reverse though, what happens? Paro says to Yosef, I have a dream, nobody can interpret it though. Nobody can interpret it. What happens in reverse? Yosef tells his father a dream, But everybody can, this is the most obvious dream I've ever had. I mean, everybody can interpret it. In source 8, we see the dream. It was the most obvious of dreams. The sun, the moon, the 11 stars bowing down. Everybody knew what that dream meant. So everything is happening in reverse. The question is, what's going on? What's the lesson behind Yosef's repetitive life events? So if we stand back and look at the whole picture, it seems almost indisputable that the events of the sale of Yosef are just occurring again and again in various iterations throughout Parshas Vayeshev and into the beginning of Parshas Mikates. We're going to talk about it. Happens with Yehuda and Tamar, happens with the story of Potiphar, happens with the story of Paro. The question is, why? And that's what I'm going to offer you, a theory as to why. And it goes a bit like this. Something went wrong, badly wrong, in the sale of Yosef. Something catastrophic went wrong in the sale of Yosef. And it wasn't owned by just one person. Yes, it's true. The brothers did something wrong. They sold Yosef and they bear a large brunt of the responsibility. But it wasn't just them. Yosef had a responsibility. Yaakov had a responsibility. As we see, the Torah goes out of the way to tell us, for example, that Yaakov favored Yosef, which led the brothers to hate him. So Yaakov has responsibility. Yosef too contributed to this cataclysm. Why? Because we know, back when he's shepherding with his brothers, the Torah goes out of his way to tell us that he used to bring bad reports back to his father. And of course, that gave the brothers reason to hate him. So somehow, all of this is combining to create a storm of sorts, a scenario so ghastly, so awful, that is creating something that nobody could ever have imagined could possibly happen. They could never have imagined that something so bad could transpire that ended up in the sale of Yosef. So what happens after the sale of Yosef? I'm going to call it, I couldn't think of a great name for it, so I'm calling it Day X. What do they call it? I'm not going to call it Groundhog Day. You know, when something's burnt to the ground?
Ground Zero.
Ground Zero. Yeah, Ground Zero. I'm going to call it Day X or Ground Zero. And that's what happens. Ground Zero is an opportunity to replay, as it were, a badly imperfect series of events with a possibility of actually redeeming those events. It's almost a second chance. It's a second chance in Parshas Vayeshev. Some of the key players in the original cataclysm get a chance to revisit their roles to see if somehow they can replay the day. Replay Day X to see if they can... Haven't they got a second chance to see if they can somehow make it better? That's what's happening. Can they somehow redeem their previous actions through their present actions? And that's what we're going to have to see, if that fits in with Parshas Vayeshev. So in the Yosef story, even as each human being is pursuing his own individual, narrowly defined goals, there seems to be the hand, the Yad Hashem, conspiring to give the individual human beings a second chance to somehow fix one of the greatest mistakes that's ever befallen mankind, the Jewish people, in an astounding but awe-inspiring phenomenon in our history, to give them hope to fix up this greatest mistake. And as the saga unfolds, we keep hearing these echoes. We keep hearing these echoes of the original sale of Yosef seems to be coming back to haunt each of these succeeding episodes. Yehuda and Tamar, we hear the echo of Yosef. Yosef and Potiphar's wife, we hear the sale of Yosef. Yosef and Paro, we hear the sale of Yosef. And each of these interactions seem to bear the unmistakable hallmark of Yosef's sale. And the question we keep asking ourselves is, why? And that's what I think is happening here. So So let's start. Let's start and work through each of those stories to see how that fits in with my theory. So we're going to start with Yehuda and Tamar.
Number.
I will tell you the number when we get there. So back in the sale of Yosef, Yehuda had been one. He had been the one to convince the brothers to sell Yosef to the Ishmaelites, right? The Ishmaelim. Afterwards, he and the brothers stripped Yosef of his coat. They slaughtered the goat, put the blood on the coat, and they asked their father, Haker Nah. Yes. Father had in fact recognized the coat, and he came to the anguished but mistaken belief that his beloved son had been killed. Right after the sale of Yosef, we get to the story of Yehuda and Tamar. It's not a digression. That's where ground zero starts. In it, Yehuda is getting to the opportunity to replay crucial aspects of his own behavior in the sale of Yosef story. And hopefully he's given opportunity to make better choices this time. Some of these choices involve goats and coats. For example, Yehuda is asked for a goat by Tamar. And when he says he doesn't have one, he gives her his coat. Instead, only to have Tamar later on challenge him with a question about that coat. A question that Yehuda would have cause to remember. Haker Nah? Do you recognize this? Of course, it's the same question that Yehuda forced on his father. Haker Nah? Rashi, of course, brings the Medrash. Points out the significance of that question hits you in the face. The first time Yehuda asks it, forces Haker Nah to bring about a false recognition, the falsehood that Yosef, Yaakov's beloved child, is dead. This time Yehuda must answer the question he once posed, whose coat is this? And he must answer it truthfully. That Yehuda's successful recognition that it is his coat in Tamar's hands, that admission ends up being heroic for many reasons. By making that recognition, Yehuda owns up to his part in one of the most embarrassing scandals, perhaps in Jewish history. One of them. But more than that, through that courageous act, Yehuda also ends up saving the lives of his unborn children. So, if you add all up, the man who once forced upon his father a false recognition that his beloved child had died, now makes a heroic, true recognition that keeps his own children very much alive. So this was Yehuda's ground zero. Through his interaction with Tamar, Yehuda found a way to confront and replay his own problematic actions in the sale of Yosef. Yeah. And when he did it right this time, he was able in some way to redeem his past, to clear his ability to move forward in his life. That's Yehuda. Let's move forward to Yosef. The Yosef saga in Potiphar's story, which is Ground Zero Part 2. Not for Yehuda, but for Yosef. So back at the pit, Yosef loses his coat, and he goes into the pit. He goes into the hole. And in this story, he loses his coat again, this time to Mrs. Potiphar. And he also descends into the hole in the ground. As we've already pointed out, you're going to say to me, it's not the same. This was a dungeon, that was a pit. But as we've already pointed out, the Torah makes it very clear, the association by calling when he's pulled out of the prison, the Torah already calls it a bor, to make the association very clear. Instead of calling it a Beit HaSoar, it calls it the bor. So it's like the events of the sale are happening all over again. Except this time, there's one crucial difference. Back at the pit, when he was put in by his brothers, the brothers forced the coat off him. This time, he chooses to leave it behind, as we see in source 9. At the end of the pasuk, V'yazo bigdo v'yada v'yanas v'yete hachutza. He left the garment in her hand, he got away and he fled outside. Now put yourself in Yosef's shoes. Right at the moment that Mrs. Potiphar grabs him by the coat, your only way out of the situation with your integrity intact is quite literally to slip out of the coat. Leave it with her. But imagine what that choice must have been like for him. It must have been a terrible choice, a terrible moment of deja vu. Yosef still suffering, in modern parlance, with PTSD. From the first time the coat was grabbed from him, thrown into the pit, now finds himself reliving that terrible moment of having his coat grabbed from him. And it feels just like it was last time. And as he takes his coat, grabs his coat, and it dawns on him what refusing her advances is going to mean for him. She'd be furious, and she was going to use his coat against him. He realizes it. And every fiber of his being cries out, never again, never again will I let myself lose a coat and face the pit. That's what he's crying out subconsciously. Never again will I allow people to lie about me to my father or the person who I relate to as a father type figure who trusts me. All I need to do is give him my coat and I'll be fine. The nightmare goes away. But Yosef, to his immense credit, doesn't do it. He overcomes the voice. Heroically, he slips out of the coat and he keeps his integrity intact. Now, he pays for that choice and he gets thrown into the dungeon. And he's going to go back to the pit. But this time it's different. He's not the victim anymore. Yes, once upon a time, the coat was stripped from him and he had no choice. But now he chooses the pit proactively. In doing that, in a deep way, he has replayed his past, he's redeemed it. How? How has Yosef redeemed his past? It's not just because he has shed his victimhood, acting proactively rather than passively, it's more than that. Yosef is fixing something very, very important. Because if you think about it, the brother's anger at Yosef wasn't inexplicable. Far from it. Yosef contributed to the resentment that swirled around him, that caused the brothers to put him into the pit. The Torah tells us that when Yosef was 17 years old, if you look at source 10, the end of the pasuk, Yava Yosef es dibatam ra'ah el avihem. The brothers used to bring bad reports of them to their father. Now why would Yosef have done that? Now the answer is, depends who you ask. If you ask 17-year-old Yosef, he would have said, why was he doing it? He was being loyal to his father. Father needed to know all the bad things that the brothers were doing. I was being loyal. In his mind, he was doing it for a higher purpose. But obviously the brothers didn't see it like that. They may have seen somebody, one of their own, their brothers, betraying them. They saw someone who was cultivating his relationship with their father at their expense. Who was right, brothers or Yosef? Well, we don't really know for sure, but you look at the word the Torah uses to describe Yosef's action here. The word is diba. Where else do we see the word diba in the Torah? We don't see it very often. Meraglim. We see it in source 12. One of the few other words at times we see it in the Torah. Sorry, source 11, sorry. But you see dibas ha'aretz. By the Meraglim, when they come and give their evil report by the Meraglim, it uses the word diba. In using diba to describe Yosef's reports, the Torah seems to suggest the brothers might have had a point in viewing Yosef's report as spying upon them, as slander, makes that connection. On the outside, Yosef looks like he's being loyal, but does actuality match appearance? Well, if Yosef's loyalty towards his father might have been flawed somewhat back when he was 17, does he ever get a second chance, a chance to do something about that flaw? And the answer may very well be yes, at ground zero. Because in the Potiphar story, Yosef once again finds himself second in charge to a man who's the master of his household. It's not his father this time, but a man who's been good to him, Potiphar, who has been maybe like a father to him. And then just like before, tension developed between him, Yosef, and other members of this household. This time, it was Potiphar's wife. And finally, as the Potiphar story barrels towards its conclusion, we find Yosef faced with the most uncomfortable of choices. A choice that has to do curiously with the meaning of loyalty. What would you do if you were faced with this awful choice? You could express loyalty to someone who is important to you, but the only way to do it is by seemingly to betray him. That's the choice, you see. When Mrs. Potiphar grabs hold of Yosef's coat and will not take no for an answer, you've got two choices. You can succumb, And Potiphar will never know about it. And you can keep going on, but life is normal, being loyal to Potiphar, succumbing with his wife, and he will never know. But that's not loyalty. Or you can reject the advances of his wife, being loyal to Potiphar by doing so, but that will result in your being sent to the dungeon. And that's the choice of loyalty, the test of loyalty that Yosef faces at this point. So if he rejects the advances of Potiphar at this point, the man who trusted you will think that you betrayed him. He will never know the truth about how worthy you really were. There was a time back when Yosef was 17 when Yosef may have chosen the appearance of loyalty over the real thing. But Yosef will not repeat that mistake a second time. No, this time, in the Potiphar story, he chooses authentic loyalty. In the short term, it gets him thrown into the pit. But authentic, loyal integrity has a way of shining through. I'm almost finished. For Yosef, it takes years for that to happen, but eventually it does, because years later, Yosef finds himself hauled out of prison by Paro. Back at the original pit, Yosef had been thrown into a hole in the ground after first losing his nice new clothes, being sent away from his father. But now, a new man, Paro, draws him near and doesn't send him away. This man gives him new, beautiful clothes, doesn't take them away. This man draws Yosef out of a hole in the ground, doesn't put him in one. That man is, of course, Paro. Paro gives him a new name, a new job, a new wife, as a father might. It's as if Hashem is giving an anguished Yosef a surrogate father who can somehow salve his wounds. What was it about Yosef that impressed Paro? We will ask this question. What made Paro act so father-like to Yosef? What was it about Yosef that was so compelling to the Egyptian king? And I think the answer is loyalty. You see, when Paro first met Yosef, in the moments after he brings him out of prison, the Egyptian king had wanted to know about his dreams. And he says to Yosef, I heard about you. I know that you can interpret dreams. And if you were Yosef, spent years in prison, and you're standing in front of the most powerful king, the most powerful person in the world, it would be so tempting to say, you're right, I can, it's me, I can do it. What does Yosef say in source 12? Biladi, not me, it's Hashem. Yosef was loyal to the Father in heaven. And so maybe he could be somebody who Paro could trust, to be loyal to him too. It's not coincidental, probably, that when Paro promotes Yosef just a few verses later, places him in charge over all of Egypt, he remembers what Yosef says about Hashem. He actually quotes Yosef's own words expressing that loyalty right back to him in source 13. He says, Yosef, I need Paro ubiladecha. Without you, he uses the same phrase, biladecha. Paro remembers Yosef's biladi. It's not me. He remembers his loyalty. In the end, Yosef's loyalty in the presence of Paro, his trustworthiness, saves him from the pit, from the royal dungeons. It's the key to his rise, to his eventual greatness. Once upon a time, perhaps Yosef would have relied on counterfeit loyalty to impress a father. Now it's true loyalty towards a father in heaven. That's what impresses Paro. That's what impresses his new father in life. Makes him a king. Where did that come from? So the seeds for that loyalty-infused declaration of Yosef, Biladai, which Yosef says so naturally without even planning it, they were planted long before Yosef ever met Paro. They were planted at the moment Yosef made the decision to enter the hole in the ground, to enter the royal dungeons in the first place. They were planted at the moment he chose to slip out of the coat, the moment he replayed the terrible events of his own sale redemptively. They were planted during Yosef's version of Ground Zero. To others watching Yosef's dizzy rise to power in Paro's court, they would seem strange. How could you have somebody come out of prison and rise to his great position? It would seem so sudden. A Hebrew slave suddenly rise to inexplicable greatness makes no sense. But mere onlookers, they don't have the perspective the Torah gives us. We look at the Torah and we see so clearly, we come to understand that Yosef had in truth risen to greatness long before. He did so at the moment he faced the pit with Potiphar's wife and he didn't flinch. When he faced that moment when he could have, with Potiphar, when he let go of the coat, and he let her take the coat, and he was faithful to Potiphar, when he showed that moment of loyalty to Potiphar, and he didn't flinch, that was the moment that his rise to greatness began. He did so. He began his upward momentum on his own ground zero. Thank you very much. Shabbos.
Exposition. Yes. Yes.